Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. This is a pretty mellow intro.
Yeah, man.
I'm Josh. That's Chuck. This makes Stuff You Should Know.
That's Jim Morrison.
Yes, it was. That was The Doors, Riders on the Storm.
We have Jim in the studio with us today.
Yeah, hey, Jim.
Did you ever see that Gap ad where they showed Jim Morrison all fat and old?
No.
It was a while ago, like probably 10 years ago. They did some of these 60s icons that passed away early as old people.
Uh-huh.
And like really realistically. That's
wow.
Pretty funny.
Yeah. I don't recall that at all.
Yeah.
And I watch a lot of TV, or I used to.
I think it was a magazine ad, print ads.
Oh, I read a lot of magazines.
Yeah.
Oh, fair use alert. Riders on the Storm was released on the 1971 album L.A. Woman,
sure.
Which we would imagine is available at a wide variety of retailers online and at brick and mortar stores.
Yeah. Great song.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of over a lot of The Doors, but I like that song.
Man. It's like how I imagine a lot of people are with Zeppelin.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, oh, I love Zeppelin. I'm in sixth grade. And then it just kind of goes away. But then you get older and you're like, wow, they really were great.
Yeah.
That didn't happen to me with Zeppelin. I got over them after sixth grade. You know that. But The Doors, that's happened to me.
You're like, back into them again?
Well, I mean, I just constantly am like in a state of coming in or out of really appreciating The Doors. But for the most part, it's solidified. It's gelled. I love The Doors.
You know, if you want to keep that intact, do yourself a favor and don't ever read any of Jim Morrison's poetry books.
I have. I have. Have you ever heard American Prayer? It's like one of the coolest things anyone's ever made.
I'm not a fan of his poetry.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, his songs were poetry. Riders on the Storm is a poem set to music.
He's the Lizard King.
Yeah. He can do anything.
That's right.
So, Chuck, have you heard of a guy named Roy Sullivan?
Yeah. I remember him from being a kid.
Do you really?
Yeah, from the old Guinness Book record.
Uh-huh. I must have skipped over his entry because I read those too.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when they'd come out and you'd be like, oh my God.
Oh, yeah,
it'd be like the Scholastic Book Fair, which amounted to a couple of like carts with books on them out
right.
in the hallway
yeah.
and some guy you didn't recognize standing
uh-huh.
there selling them. I missed that one. But let's tell everybody else.
I haven't looked him up since then, but if I remember correctly, he had the record for being struck, right?
Yeah.
By lightning?
Yeah. Roy Sullivan, he was a park ranger at Shenandoah National Park.
Okay.
Okay. And he died in 1983. And between 1940 and 1977, he was struck seven times. Struck by lightning seven times. And actually, there's two of his Ranger Stetson hats that he was wearing while he was struck that are in the Guinness World Record, I guess, museums.
And they have burned holes in them, right?
Yeah.
And he was just smiling. I remember seeing the picture. I can picture it in my head.
He did not die of being struck by lightning. He died, a full 6 years after the last time he was struck.
Really?
Yeah.
From plugging in something in his house and getting shocked?
He's like tripped on a banana peel.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess I bring this up because we're talking about lightning, and you brought up a really
excellent point that his Stetson hat was burned, but this guy survived. Mm-hmm. Even though lightning is many, many, many times more powerful than, you know, a typical industrial electrocution voltage.
Sure.
That will just typically kill anybody.
Yeah.
Lightning, frequently people survive. As a matter of fact, like 2/3 of people who are struck by lightning survive.
Yeah.
Between 90% and 2/3, depending on who you ask.
That's pretty good.
So, I am very excited about this one.
I'm so glad.
I love natural phenomena.
I do, too.
I love earth sciences.
I don't necessarily.
I do because I get it. Once you get it, it's like geometry. Like, once you get geometry, you can't unget geometry, and all of a sudden, this whole segment of nature just becomes clear to you.
Well, I'm glad you're covering this side of the love, because I don't have it.
You don't?
No, I mean, I think it's neat enough, but I'm not as into the earth sciences.
At the very least, the pictures in this article are really, really awesome.
Yeah.
Did you get to see some of them?
Oh,
I
sure.
mean, those are pretty.
They're very pretty.
It's black and white, and that's still worth looking at.
Look at all those leaders.
If you want to go, if you want to go to the website, howstuffworks.com, and type in lightning, it will bring up a lot of these pictures, but in color.
Yeah.
We just don't print in color here.
I do occasionally, but yeah.
Do you?
If it's something that I think should be in color.
I like to preserve cyan.
Good for you.
All right, so Chuck, let's talk lightning, shall we?
Sure.
You got your Statman role. Did you read that one thing, the NASA article? There's some stats in there that I thought you'd just have a bonanza with.
I didn't get to it.
Oh, buddy. All right, I'll play the Statman role then.
Okay.
Because there were some good stats in there. Do you want me to start out with a few?
Sure.
Chuck.
I got a few, too. Between, let's tag team it.
Between this one study of lightning strikes between 1959 and 1994 found that, let's see, 9,818 people were struck by lightning in that time.
Wow.
3,239 died. 20% died immediately. Like, it was like, you were just struck by lightning, you're over.
Yeah. That's got to be like a direct strike, right?
All of them are direct strikes.
Oh, really?
As far as I understand, yes. These were all direct strikes. Like, you can be struck directly, like Ranger Roy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he survived. Men are 4 times likelier than women to be struck by lightning.
Okay.
The 2/3 of lightning casualties occur between 12 p.m. and 4 p.m., with the maximum at 4 p.m.
Yes.
Most lightning casualties happen on a Sunday, and Wednesday is the second most frequent day. And then July is the peak month. Florida is the state that has the most reported lightning strikes for people. So if it's 4 p.m. on a Wednesday mm-hmm. in July and you're in Florida and you're a man holding like a golf club,
yeah,
kiss your butt goodbye.
The good Lord would never stop the best game of golf
exactly.
I've ever played.
Yeah.
I think I remember in a different podcast we talked about the 4th of July actually being the number one day.
I think I remember that as well.
And I think that's part and parcel to the fact that July is the biggest month and there are way more people outside recreating near bodies of water on the 4th of July, which, you know, water, of course, could help.
Yeah. I knew this dude who actually printed the alternative paper that I helped found.
Uh-huh.
And he would say that he was vacating. We're going to vacate for 2 weeks, me and the family.
Oh, really?
Going down to Disney World to vacate.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
The only little cool factoids I have are lightning is not necessarily always white or whitish yellow. It has to do with the background that you're
really?
Looking at. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And that lightning is only 1 inch wide.
Yeah, I saw it was 1 to 2 inches in diameter.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's it.
And it's hot, 54,000 degrees or 6 times hotter than the surface of the sun.
I saw 60,000.
Yeah, I'd say that's in the same range.
That's close.
Sure.
I mean, that's
6,000 degrees. That's not much when you're up that high.
Yeah. It'll fry an egg for sure.
All right.
So, you say that there are some cool factoids associated with lightning.
Sure.
I say that lightning as a whole is one cool factoid.
Agreed.
Made up of smaller component factoids.
Agreed.
Yeah. And also, I'm sure somebody's going to be like, you guys used the word factoid wrong, but we will decimate that person.
All right. Do we need to start with clouds since we've covered that so thoroughly? Or
I feel like we do because with this process of cloud formation, it is part and parcel with lightning formation. They think. We should really point out here, man, that it's not just this article. It's not just How Stuff Works that says that scientists aren't really sure how all this happens.
Yeah.
NASA says so. What's the national laboratory? It begins with the A. Man. Well, anyway, one of the national laboratories says so that I read uh-huh. about. So basically, we don't fully understand how lightning forms, but we have some good guesses.
It occurs within a second, so it's like it's not the easiest thing in the world to study.
No, it's really not.
You know, if you think about it,
we can recreate it, which is pretty neat.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so but yes, let's start with precipitation and the water cycle, right?
Okay.
You've got water, say here on the Earth's surface, when heat is transferred from the environment. Mm-hmm. Remember, heat always goes from something that's warm to something that's cold. That's how heat transfer occurs.
Yeah.
Something doesn't lose its cold, it gains heat, right?
That's right.
So when that happens, water can vaporize and rise up into the atmosphere. That's evaporation.
Yep.
And once it reaches a certain point, it's going to lose its heat to the external environment, cool down.
It gets chilly.
It's going to turn back into water. It's going to fall back down to the ground in the form of precipitation. That's condensation, right?
Yeah. So it's either going to get slightly chilly and be rain, or it's going to get really chilly and be snow or freezing rain.
Right. So if you get enough water vapor going up and you get enough condensation starting to come down and they start knocking into each other, this is what scientists think, they can start knocking electrons from one another.
Yeah.
Right? The electrons are going to keep going down. They're going to stay, say, as a cloud forms. They're going to accumulate around the bottom of the cloud.
Yeah, like a little puffy cloud couch there that at the bottom of the cloud.
They're just all tucked in.
They just settle in and nestle down.
And then for this example's sake, think of positively charged particles, the ones that are now missing their electron.
Yeah.
Are just lighter, so they're going to accumulate at the top.
Yeah, but they're contained in the cloud.
Right, so at the top of the cloud, you have all these positively charged particles. At the bottom, you have negatively charged particles, electrons. And all of a sudden, you have what's called an electric field.
Yeah, charge separation,
yeah.
Which is can do some funky stuff.
Well, that's how batteries work.
Yeah.
Because, Chuck, as you'll remember, nature loves homeostasis. Right?
Yeah, if these things are separate, they just want to bring them back together.
Exactly. Electrons love to flow toward the direction of positively charged particles to neutralize it.
Yeah.
And that's an electric charge. Electricity is just an electron flow. Okay? So you have a cloud that's suddenly like a battery.
A big honking battery.
Yeah. And as this charge separation becomes more and more charged, like there's more and more positive particles, more and more negative particles.
Yeah.
It actually, as these negative particles or the electrons are accumulating at the bottom of the cloud, the charge can become so great that here on the Earth's surface, dude, it actually presses the electrons down into the Earth.
Yeah, and
they
it's so hard
them.
To imagine this, but it happens when you're walking around out there during a thunderstorm.
Yeah.
Like, it is being pushed below your feet, leaving the ground positively charged.
Yes.
And ready to join their little buddies.
Yep.
Up there in the clouds.
So you have this layer of electrons, and now you have two electric fields. It can either go up within the cloud, or it can go down to the ground.
Yeah, that's a common, like, that was my first question was, if these electrons within the cloud are separated, why are they going all the way down to Earth? Why don't they just, you know, have lightning inside the cloud? And the answer is, well, that happens all the time.
Yeah.
That's the most common form of lightning, is when the electrons form lightning within its little fluffy buddy there.
It's like cloud to cloud or intra-cloud lightning?
Intra-cloud is within the same cloud.
Yeah.
Inter is between two clouds.
Okay, yeah. But it still falls in the cloud to cloud category.
Yeah.
So I think there's two main divisions,
cloud to cloud
and cloud to ground.
Yeah.
And then ground to cloud is also ground to cloud still.
Sure.
But it's not because it's going between the ground and cloud or between a cloud and itself or another cloud.
Yeah, I like a little cloud on cloud action. That's my favorite thing.
Okay, so you have this, you have the Earth suddenly taking on a positive charge on its surface. You have a strong negative charge at the bottom of the, at the bottom of the cloud.
Yeah.
And you have nature going like, what's to do? This is terrible. Like, there's an electrical potential here and it's making me nervous. Like, something has to change. So, something does change. There's this process called the ionization of air. And it's basically turning air into what's called plasma.
Yeah.
By ripping it apart, essentially.
Yeah. I like to call it ionic separation. I've coined that term.
Nice.
I don't know if it's what anyone else in science calls it. But basically, the air around the cloud breaks down. So the electric field is really strong. It separates the ions.
Mm-hmm.
Now they can move a lot more freely and can conduct a lot more electricity.
Well,
in
yeah,
the end.
It takes regular air, like the stuff we're breathing now, and it separates the electrons from the positive ions.
Yeah, but not they're still within the same area. They're not like completely separate.
Right. It's not like opening the curtains with two hands.
Right.
But it is kind of in a certain way. With these free electrons, it makes this little bit of air that's been ionized much more conductive, like you said.
Yeah, plasma.
Okay, so this happens in little, like, 50-yard jolts, and they call those step leaders. Each little separation of air creation of plasma creates a channel in the air that is very conductive, way more conductive than the surrounding air.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens in little 50-yard branches.
Yeah, and they don't have to go straight down. They're basically looking to get to the ground with the path of least resistance.
Right.
So if you see this, Discovery had a show. Did you see that on YouTube?
Uh-uh.
What was it called? Raging Planet. Discovery had a show called Raging Planet.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And for the first time, they filmed a lightning strike in the super slow-mo.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see this, like, with your naked eye, I mean, it all happens in a blip, and you just see a lightning strike. But
right.
when you see it slowed down, you see the lightning working its way down in little 50-yard
mm-hmm.
bits
mm-hmm.
and fracturing off to the left and to the right and basically, like, disappearing again because it didn't find its way all the way to the ground.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it would just go, like, left and then disappear, and then it would go down, and then it would go to the right and disappear. And
right, because
really cool.
These channels that form, basically you have a bunch of these step leaders coming down, and whichever reaches the ground first wins, but just because one reached the ground doesn't mean the other ones automatically disappear.
Yeah.
So that flow of electrons is going to fill up all of the associated ion channels.
Yeah, these paths channels. That it's created.
Right.
Sure.
With this flow of electrons, right? So before that happens, though, you've got these step leaders coming down from the clouds. You also have something called positive leaders, right? It's positive streamers, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You also have positive streamers coming up from the ground. So
yes.
A positive streamer is a step leader is a plasma channel
mm-hmm.
forming in the direction of the flow of electrons. A positive streamer is a plasma channel forming in the opposite direction of the flow of electrons. So it's kind of stretching up.
And it could come from the ground. It could come from your head. It could come from a tree or that golf club you're holding. And they've captured these in photographic form. And it's the same thing. It looks like, you know, a little purplish bolt of lightning coming up from the ground trying to join up with its buddy that's coming down from the sky.
Yeah, and like you said, like it can come from you. The reason your hair lifts up when you're in like an electrical storm, you just become a positive streamer, which is not good.
It sounds nice.
It does, and you're glowing a little purplish, but you're in big trouble if it connects with you.
Yeah, and it's the same concept if you've ever shocked yourself on a doorknob. It's the same thing. The closer once you've built up that energy, the hand gets closer to the metal
mm-hmm.
and it leaps out from your finger and out from the doorknob and, you know, you've got lightning.
Okay. So, I mean, we're drawing this out like I'm about to hyperventilate. I'm so excited. Finally, at one point you have a step leader. And like you said, it's taken the path of least resistance, right?
Yeah.
So it's not going to come straight down, largely because the shape of the cloud is not equal or is not totally flat.
Yeah, particles in the air can get in the way, all
exactly.
kinds of stuff.
Right. So they're coming down in little branches that branch off. Some lead nowhere. Eventually, one comes down, and a step leader connects with a positive streamer.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you have a full, uninterrupted path for these electrons to flow. And boy, do they flow. What you have is lightning, right?
That's right.
You have a sudden current exchange from the cloud down to the earth, and then from the earth back up to the cloud. Because the lightning strike isn't just from the cloud to the ground. It goes down and then back up immediately.
Yeah. Well, it's
and it's on the back up. Yeah, a return
stroke.
Yes, a return stroke.
Yeah.
Thank you. On the way back up, that's when you see the light.
Literally.
So lightning is we don't actually see the electron flow. We see the local effects of the electron flow. And this electron flow produces a tremendous amount of heat energy. What did you say? It was like hotter than the surface of the sun, right?
Yeah, six times hotter. So that's what you're seeing right there.
Okay.
Is an explosion of heat.
Right. And then that heat actually explodes the air around it. And that produces thunder.
Yeah. The way I understood it was the channel, the ionized plasma channel that's created, when it goes away, the air collapsing back in on itself is what creates that sound wave. Is that right?
What I heard was that it's actually exploding outward and it's compressing the air, basically exploding the air around it. That converts into a shock wave in the form of sound that travels outward. That's how I understood it.
Well, maybe it collapses in and explodes out.
So that's very democratic of you. And then one more thing about thunder, Chuck. Get this. There's three segments to the sound of thunder. Did you know that?
I thought Pink Floyd said there was like four.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay. Because I remember Delicate Sound of Thunder, but yeah. I don't remember four parts.
No, I was joking.
Okay. So there's the first part. Think about it. Think about when you've ever heard thunder. It's like there's like a few sounds to it, right?
Sure.
So the first part is actually caused by the step leaders, right? That's a tearing sound.
Yeah.
The second, a cracking sound, is actually caused by the positive streamers.
Right.
And then the third part is the explosion of the air blowing up. But what you're hearing, those first two parts, is literally the air ripping open. Isn't that crazy?
Yep. And if you are out in the country, you might be able to hear that as far away as 15 miles.
Yeah.
If you're in the city, maybe about 5 miles.
Nice.
You'll be able to hear that thunder. And it is true that you can divide by five, and that is roughly how far away your lightning is from you.
That's true.
Counting from the point the lightning strikes till you hear the thunder, divide that amount of seconds by five. 10 seconds, it's 2 miles away.
How does that rule of thumb work? I mean, don't storms travel faster?
Well, no, I think it has nothing to do with how fast they're traveling. It's the speed of light versus the speed of sound.
Oh, yeah, because the speed of light travels at the speed of light. The speed of sound is far, far slower, which is why the sound of thunder lags the flash of lightning so much.
You just explained it to yourself.
Thank you. Thanks, self. No problem, Joe.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
I think it's time for lightning myth number one. Whoa. Did you hear
pretty,
that?
That was a good sound effect. Way dramatic. To go, Jerry.
All right. Lightning myth number one. Once again, the tallest objects in a storm don't always get struck by lightning. It would make sense that lightning, if it's going to be reaching something that's sticking up from the ground in the way of a positive streamer, that the tallest thing will always be that thing. And that is not the case because you can never really predict the path of lightning.
No.
It might strike the ground right next to the tallest thing.
It might also, yes, because that path of least resistance, whether it's dust or the curvature of the earth or whatever, that's, yeah, you can't predict where it's going to go. And even more than that, once the lightning is struck,
yeah,
it may jump.
Oh, yeah.
That is a property of lightning. It may jump to something that has an even lesser path of resistance.
That's right.
And that could be you. So it could strike a tree that you're standing by, and you could be like, woo, and then,
yeah.
Wait,
I guess what?
Way to bust that myth, dude.
Oh, thank you. I think since you brought that up, we might as well talk about the fact that when you see lightning and you see it in the clouds and then down on the ground and then flickering in the clouds afterward and remnants branching off, that's like maybe 40 or 50 lightning strikes you're seeing all at once.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
The whole idea that lightning doesn't strike the same place twice.
Every time it strikes it twice.
It strikes it like you said, 40, 50 yeah. times. Yeah, it's this, that electron flow, the back and forth between the ground and the earth in this, which neutralizes the electrical charge. It's not just one stroke. It's 40 or 50.
Yeah. And that's what you're more likely to see even unless you just happen to be looking in the field of view of that original blast.
Right.
That's why it's so tough to capture, like, the Discovery Channel guy on Raging Planet he sits in a room with his little camera, and I would just let the camera run. I don't know why he sat there with his finger on the button. It's like, dude, just press record and walk away.
Right.
But,
No, he's a purist.
Well, I think maybe because it's such a high speed camera.
Plus also Hipstamatic doesn't have a video function.
But he likened it to fishing. He said, it's a little like fishing.
Huh.
It's like, wow.
Did he say it like that? Like a jerk?
Yeah, he was a little bored.
Huh.
But he got it. You know, it was all worth it in the end.
Yeah, that's what counts.
Okay, Josh, I think it's time to talk about various types of lightning.
Yeah, so we talked about cloud to ground. Under an umbrella under which ground to cloud falls.
Sure.
And another way to put it is that's triggered or artificial and natural. Natural is when it comes down from the cloud to the ground.
Yeah.
Triggered or artificial is when some sort of man-made structure, say a skyscraper, initiates this lightning. So it's sending up a positive streamer like, hey man, come on, let's do this.
Right.
And the cloud's like, oh, okay. And then it comes down.
rather than
the cloud pressing down the electrons, I think,
right.
on the Earth's surface and then just hitting a cow. Cause what's more natural than lightning striking a cow?
That's right. Instant prime rib.
Yeah.
Types of lightning, normal lightning, which pretty much is what we've been talking about. Sheet lightning is reflected in the clouds, and I guess that would fall under intra and inter-cloud lightning.
I would think so.
Heat lightning is my favorite because that reminds me of growing up, going to Florida and swimming at my cousin's house.
Mm-hmm.
And heat lightning is basically lightning that's so far away you can't hear the thunder.
Right, and it's hot enough. The reason they call it heat lightning is because it's hot enough that it's being reflected a tremendous distance by this higher temperature atmosphere.
It's a comforting lightning, though.
It is.
Because you don't feel threatened.
Often reddish.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And during the summer months.
Yeah.
Ball lightning, which we have talked about before.
We weren't entirely certain back then that it actually existed, but I think since we've mentioned it.
Oh, really? Is it super proven?
That we've figured out that it can exist, but no one understands it.
Yeah, that's the phenomenon where, like, you will see a ball of lightning going through your house, correct?
Yes. Remember, it was some listener wrote in about it.
Yeah.
Was it like the spontaneous combustion
it
episode
might have
that
been.
Came up?
I don't know that I've ever seen it captured, though, on film or anything. Has it been?
Yes. It's been recreated.
Oh, okay. That's right.
I don't think it's been someone hasn't caught the natural
right.
version of it. But, yeah, so we've proven it can exist. But, yeah, it'll burn you, and then it'll blow up. It's really dangerous, scary, crazy lightning that no one gets.
Josh, is it time for lightning myth number two?
It sounds like it.
Number two, and this is something I learned today. A surge protector will not save your computer and your television from a lightning strike. I thought that's what they were for.
Yeah.
Apparently they're only for, they can only, save your computer or TV if it's something that the power company has surged.
Right. It's a surge from your electrical supply.
So what you need is something called a, what's it called? A lightning
arrestor.
Yeah.
Ching, ching.
And I've seen that. And they're relatively inexpensive. And it's filled up with a gas that basically diffuses it. Well, I mean, it was like $30.
Oh, yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to be like compared to a new Volvo.
Well, that's what I thought. A lightning arrestor sounded, and it was filled with gas that diffuses the charge. Mm-hmm. I thought it'd be like $10,000.
Yeah.
But no.
Even with gas prices today.
That's right.
So we talked about types of lightning. We should probably talk about lightning rods at some point. Like maybe now. So do you know Ben Franklin actually invented these things? And I went and double checked.
Yeah.
Like I was like, this sounds like 4-year-old textbook stuff.
Yeah, but it's true, isn't it?
And I also remembered, oh wait, like his kite experiment, he ripped off a couple of Frenchmen. I went and checked that out. No, actually, Franklin had conducted some sort of experiments and possibly proposed a kite experiment.
Oh yeah.
And these Frenchmen, he published his results in the early 1750s, and a couple of Frenchmen like carried him out. So the Frenchmen actually did do this. But Ben Franklin did develop lightning rods as early as like the 1740s, I believe.
But he did have a kite key experiment, right?
He did.
Okay.
I don't know if it's not 100% certain that he actually carried out the key on the kite experiment, or just said, you know, this theoretically could work. It's a thought experiment. Don't be so stupid to go do this.
Well, let's call that lightning myth number 3.
Okay.
And here's some retroactive lightning for that one and thunder.
Whoa.
All right, but he did develop the lightning rod. And basically, a lightning rod is a metal rod mm-hmm. on the roof of a building mm-hmm. that is attached to a metal wire that runs into the ground. And its job is to either divert that direct lightning strike into the ground and diffuse it quickly, or if it's jumping around, to collect that and diffuse it so it doesn't cause like super lots of damage to the Chrysler Building.
Right. But it doesn't attract lightning. It says, hey, lightning, I got a positive streamer and I'm not going to resist you at all. Just take me. And the lightning will be like, hey, you look pretty good.
Yeah.
And there you go.
But it doesn't attract lightning. And I know the article says that's nitpicking, but it's really not.
There's a big difference between offering a good path of least resistance
sure.
to lightning and attracting it.
Yeah, because the whoever wrote this article, who was this? Do you know?
I didn't recognize the name. I think it's an old article.
Basically said the lightning's going to be happening anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's going to cause lightning to strike there. So that made a lot of sense.
They also made a pretty good point that because lightning rods conduct electricity so well, that makes them, they're not going to be singed or burned or whatever. It's when you resist that lightning burns you.
Right.
So, like, if lightning strikes the wood of a house,
mm-hmm.
The wood's not a very good conductor, which means there's going to be a high amount of burn and heat damage.
Right.
Because resistance produces this heat energy.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Huh. What else do we have? Do we have another lightning myth?
Man, they are just coming hard and fast these days.
Well, we saved them. All right, lightning myth number 4.
The Faraday cage, right?
Yeah.
So you are in a car.
Yeah.
And it's a lightning storm. You've actually sought shelter in a car.
That's good move.
Good move.
Yeah.
And most people think that's because the tires on the car are touching the ground and they're rubber.
Yeah.
And they're a good insulator. Not true. In a lightning storm, rubber actually becomes pretty conductive,
yeah.
especially when it's struck by lightning.
Yeah.
But if your car is struck by lightning, you should be fairly protected because of this thing called the Faraday cage, named after Michael Faraday, the early electrical genius from, I think, the 18th century.
Yeah, I think he's the one that first described what an electrical field is, period.
Yeah, he was just a very smart guy.
Yeah.
The fact that he didn't die of electrocution is really something.
That means he's super smart.
But he realized that if you put something in a metal cage and apply an electrical charge current to the cage,
mm-hmm.
what's inside the cage will be fine
because
electricity passes along the outside of the metal cage, the Faraday cage.
Yeah.
Well, engineers incorporate that into automobile design. So it's a pretty good place to seek shelter.
Yeah, you don't want to be laying naked on the hood of your car.
No.
But being inside your car would be a pretty good place to be.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with your tires, so don't be a dummy.
And I guess that's our first tip, if we're going to give some lightning tips. If you are out and about,
yeah.
And if you're driving around Kansas, I don't know why, God forbid you would be doing anything like that. But stay in your car or get in your car.
Yeah.
If you don't have a car, don't go under a tree. Don't go climb the flagpole.
All right.
They say to put your feet close together and crouch down to the ground.
Yes, but keep your head as low to the ground as you can get it without touching the ground. Don't let anything but the bottom of your shoes touch the ground.
Yeah.
Because when lightning strikes, it sends an electrical current across the ground as well, right?
Yeah.
So if your head happens to be touching, all of a sudden you've just had a stroke or some sort of neurological damage because you just got struck by lightning.
Cardiac arrest at the very least.
Yeah. But also if you are crouched down, you're providing less of a chance to create a positive streamer with your body.
Right.
So you want to find shelter, and if you can't find shelter, you want to crouch down, keep your head low, but not touching the ground.
Right.
And also there's a study in Japan, Chuck, that found that once you hear thunder, there is no safe interval where you're not vulnerable to a direct lightning strike. By the time you hear thunder,
it's already there.
Yeah, it's already too late. You could be struck by lightning at any second.
So there's no warning sound then?
Nope. No. That's and you also want to get out of pools because they are really good at conducting electricity.
Yeah, don't stand around in water.
No. Nope.
It's not a good idea. No. Stay off the telephone. If you still have a telephone that's plugged into a cord on a wall.
Yeah. If you buy things that have the As Seen on TV label, stay off the phone.
It means you're also in Kansas, too, interestingly. Yeah. And they say, you know, stay out of the bathtub. A, because it's got water, but one of the other reasons, if you're in an older house, your plumbing pipes are going to be pretty good conductors and attractors of that electricity.
Right.
But your newer house, probably PVC.
Right, exactly.
So or you're if you fine. Didn't skimp when you redid your house, you might have paid for copper.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
You really want to remember. Or you just be like, let's just not take a bath or a shower while there's a lightning storm.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
And then I guess, is that it for the lightning myths too?
I think so. I have no more little factoids on my sheet either.
I've got one.
All right, let's hear it.
Charonopathy. Charonopathy.
Okay.
It's the study of lightning's effects on the human body, the study of the pathology of lightning.
Oh, is this the NASA thing?
It was mentioned in there, yeah.
Okay.
Isn't that cool, though? Like, talk about a specialized field. Like, not the effects of electricity on the human body, the effects of lightning striking the human body.
Did they study people like Sullivan?
I imagine he saw a charonopathist or two.
I bet you... Like, he had to have become more susceptible, right? Like, is that possible?
I don't know. That could be a lightning myth that we might not dispel at this time.
I mean, I would think if the guy got... I mean, granted, he was a park ranger, so he's out there at least.
You mentioned a Stetson hat having a burn.
Mm-hmm.
So, despite the fact that, like, lightning is six times hotter than the sun, produces heat six times hotter than the sun, heats the air to, like, 18,000 degrees, causing it to explode, it can still hit a human... And the only burn wounds typically are at the point of entry and the point of exit.
How does it not kill people all the time?
I don't know. The one thing that they say is possible, the one possible explanation is that it happens so fast that it doesn't have the same amount of time that a like an industrial electrocution has.
Interesting.
And remember the hysterical strength thing? Do you want to tell them why people are thrown with electricity?
What was it? Oh, that's right. It's not the actual blast. It's the surge of adrenaline is so great that you have this superhuman strength and sort of leap back from it.
Yeah,
right?
Your muscles contract so hard and so fast that you throw yourself.
Yeah, that's crazy.
With lightning, I don't think that's true. I think the shockwave can actually throw you.
You know, my grandfather, that eventually led to his death. He was an electrician.
Oh, yeah?
I think I might have told the story. And he was at the top of a thing and used to test electricity with the back of your hand so it doesn't latch on.
Oh, yeah.
And it popped him out. He hit a live wire and it knocked him out of a telephone pole and he landed on his head.
Oh, man.
And he was, like, bedridden for the rest of his life. And
oh, man.
Died, yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was Granddaddy Bryant. I was a little kid. I mean, he died when I was, like, six, so... Gotcha. All I ever knew of him was he was kind of this big scary guy in a hospital bed.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Who gave you candy?
Yeah, candy and like buffalo nickels.
That was a bummer way to end this one.
Yeah.
Let's see. You got any other terrible stories?
No.
Okay. Well, then let's go to listener mail. Oh, wait. I didn't even say how stuff works. What is wrong with me? If you want to see some very pretty lightning pictures and read more about lightning... you can just type that in. This is like a seminal article for How Stuff Works.
Yeah.
It's like bread and butter stuff. Lightning. Search bar. HowStuffWorks.com. Now it's time for listener mail.
Josh, I'm going to call this email I just received, 10 minutes ago.
Oh, okay.
Hot off the presses.
Wow.
Guys and Jerry have been wanting to write for ages, and now I actually have things to say. I've been listening to the podcast for years. I probably listened to 99% of them. I never listened to the few in the beginning before you two teamed up. Well, that's pretty nice.
Yeah.
I learned so much from them. Your podcast is the reason I survived mowing lawns for a summer without my brain becoming mush from the endless walking back and forth. What I really want to write and say, though, is thanks for helping me get into my college. My main essay for applying to colleges was about your podcast. I entitled it Healthcare to Zoot Suits. And I talked all about the things I'd learned from your podcast, hoping it would show the colleges that I was curious, well-rounded, and had a thirst for knowledge.
Nice.
Apparently it worked because I was accepted to several colleges, and I will be a freshman at St. Olaf College next year, next fall. I don't know if they have a team.
St. Olaf, they're like the fighting roses from Golden Girls.
Really?
That's where Rose from Golden Girls is from, St. Olaf.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't watch Golden Girls.
What?
I don't know. It didn't.
It's not too late. It's still on Lifetime every day, as far as I know.
Really? All right. So, Aaron M. from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Congratulations for getting into St. Olaf College. She says thanks for the inspiration.
That is awesome.
And good luck in college. It's going to be great. It only gets better from there, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Life aging.
Agreed.
But then it starts to go down. But that'll be a while.
I thought that was like 50 when that happened.
Yeah. Well. We'll see.
Okay. So, congratulations, Aaron. If you are someone who has used us to further your own agenda, say, like, getting into college or getting a date or whatever, we want to hear that kind of story. You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. And you can send us an email to StuffPodcast@Discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints.
Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.